Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome to Barrel It Up. I'm your host, Jay Jambrone. This is the podcast where we talk to people about why they're continuing to play in sports well into their 50s, 60s, and 70s, why they're doing that. And we like to know a little bit about them besides that. And today we're really happy that we're working with Jeff Lowry from APN Video. And APNvideo.com is the place to go to get his information when you can. And that'll be in the description. Don't worry about remembering that. We'll make sure that it's written out for you later in the description. And we also have the great pleasure of continuing to talk today with Ken Foreman. And it's been great to talk to him so far. We have so much more to talk to him about that we had to create a whole second show. So, Ken, welcome back to the show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
I wanted to make a comment about something we were talking about in the first show there, where you're talking about the World Series. One of the things that, you mentioned all the little swag we used to get, and we also don't get the barbecue anymore. COVID hit, the barbecue went away for COVID and it never came back. I think that was whether guys liked the hamburgers or the hot dogs a whole lot, it was still a place where you could get together as a group, your team, other teams, people that you've known over the years. You sat around and had a burger with them on that special night, part of that camaraderie. The other thing was about the booths. A point that I would like to make about the booths is, because I had a booth the first time that they did that out in the parking lot, and what I was selling, not important, but had a booth out there. And one of the things that I always wanted to tell people that had the booths, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, is that you didn't go there to make money in your booth. You weren't with it. What you had to pay for the booth and bringing your stuff to the tournament and your inventory, whatever, you weren't going to make money off of that weekend. What you were doing was letting everybody know who you were, what kind of products you have, and creating a relationship with them. And that it's a shame that that went away, because I know people, friends of mine, who came to the tournament. And even though they weren't playing in the tournament, they missed having an opportunity to see some of those other things that were being shown there.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Also, back at the beginning, at the end of the tournament, they used to have a banquet.
Oh, yeah.
The banquet used to be at, I think, the Rustler's Roost down on Baseline in Ahwatukee, where they would give awards and acknowledgments for people who played. All of this stuff is like a culmination of the 3 weeks that was pretty special.
Yeah.
But it's all gone now. It's like, okay, the tournament's gone now. Let's go down to Florida and do that instead of just ending it in a way where it keeps a memory until the following year.
Yeah.
Now it's just not the same anymore.
Yeah, I remember Rustler's Roost. I remember we won a championship game, and it went into like 13 or 14 innings. And so that it was the banquet night. So we all had to try and jump in all our cars and get from Papago Park down to the Rustler's Roost to get there in time to enjoy the banquet and get our recognition, that everybody got at that point.
Mm-hmm. It's become too commercialized. There's money to be made by the league, and I understand that. But to me, the fact that it used to be for the players, and the players enjoyed it, and the players would take their vacations around them to go out there, because it was an experience not only to play, but all the the surroundings.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that Ken doesn't realize that he has been replaced by a Tesla robot for the 2026 tournament.
Or an AI version.
Probably in the near future, by the way.
Or an AI version of himself.
Yes.
That's a frightening thought.
Yes, it sure is.
One of me is enough.
Well, Ken, talk about the state of the game at the major league level now. What's your take on all the changes? You know, now we can challenge pitches and everything, all the changes that's going on in Major League Baseball.
Well, I hate to be C.V. Buckner right around now. You know, he's, I think the last six calls he made as a home plate ump were all wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be strike zone was the letters to the knees.
Uh-huh.
And then the umps start having their own strike zone. So you had to adjust yourself to the umps. And that's understandable, but some of those pitches were so bad. And these guys are getting paid at least to be somewhat decent.
Yeah.
And the problem that now catchers have revenge, pitchers have revenge, batters, where all they have to do is hit the top of their helmet and the umps are made accountable.
Uh-huh.
And I think that it's a good thing for baseball, because now they have to be accountable for their calls.
Mm-hmm.
Players are accountable. Managers were accountable. But umps, you know, they're not called to on the carpet. You know, they don't know what happens behind the scenes, but then the umps will just go to their game. Could you imagine? Remember when Jim Joyce made that such an egregious call that caused Galarraga his perfect game?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness, yeah.
I was watching.
You know, it killed him, but he suffered no consequence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just think, if you'd had that in business, if you had a job and you cost the company or you cost somebody something so dear, you would have been fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I know he apologized, and Galarraga was a really classy guy, because I don't know if I could have been that classy.
Yeah.
I might have had to meet him in the hallway and beat him over the head with a bat. But that's just me. It's about time that umpires are made accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they get paid a good wage. They have schools that are supposed to teach them how to umpire. And everybody has their own preference.
Yeah.
But I do think that there has to be more of a standard of where the ball.
Like the ABS is going to keep them accountable. I would say so.
Well, yeah. And the funny thing is that it used to be the American League umpire had this balloon chest protector.
Right.
And the National League had, I guess, what they have now. So you saw the pitches a different perspective. Home plate, especially the home plate umpires, they're not God, even though they like to think they are. And a lot of the umpires, especially as the years went on, they're the ones that would start the confrontation. You know, a manager may say something, and then the umpires would just walk in, approach them and stay in their face and almost dare them to say something.
Yeah.
When they did, they were thrown out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember back in the day, what was his, Paul Harvey? No, Nestor Shylock, one of them, they would say, you know, you umpired a good game is when nobody knew you were there.
That's right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody would be complaining because you did a great job.
Yeah.
Now, the umpires want to be part of the game.
Uh-huh.
You know, I almost equate that to newscasters. Walter Cronkite would report the news, and that's it. Now, newscasters want to be the news.
That's right.
I agree.
But that's that was just a little public service announcement. But yeah,
well, and of course, you know, now even before this rule came into effect, you had the little box on every TV show that showed exactly where the pitch went and all that, and you know, so that started the old pressure on these guys because. You know, now you could see quite clearly whether or not they were right on the call or not.
You know, and they want offense. They want the game to go quicker. So pitchers can only go throw to a base twice. Otherwise, mm-hmm. the third time they throw, if they don't catch them leaning, it's an automatic balk. Mm-hmm. Like in all sports, offense is, I guess, what sells. So
yeah.
they want to make sure that the pitchers don't constantly go over there. But if you know that, pitchers need a break too.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to, if you know you're going to run, it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they enlarge the bases so that it's the size of a pizza box now.
Yeah.
You got to ask yourself, what next? Are they mm-hmm. going to make sure that the bats are only 29 inches and it's got to have a toothpick barrel or something, you know?
Like this bat looks like a Fungo back here.
Yeah. What size is that bat?
That's it's worn off. It's small. I got this at Bat Day, Riverfront Stadium in 1976.
Nice.
I traded Johnny Bench's autograph for the Pete Rose, so I thought I'd show it here.
That's right.
You know, you can't go wrong either way.
No. Both were great players.
See, I've always used a heavy bat.
You know, can talk about that strike zone for a moment. You said, you know, back when you started, when I started, Jay started, umpires called, you know, the letters up in here. And then I noticed that, you know, like I remember George Foster hitting 50 plus home runs for the Reds in 77. No one did it again until I think it was Fielder in the early 90s, 91. And then all of a sudden we had 52 guys hit 50 home runs during the steroid era.
Right.
And my question to both of you, And I have my own opinion on this. Everybody said, well, you know, Bonds and Ramirez, they're all beefing up. That's why they're hitting all these home runs. And you know, if you're on steroids, you're probably off the disabled list a little bit more.
Yeah.
But when you shrink a strike zone or expand it, that is going to affect a batting average or an on-base percentage more than big arms.
Mm-hmm.
Or being able to lift 300 or 400 pounds.
You ever pitch a game that there are no corners, that the plate looks round because now you almost have to throw it toward the middle and batters can hit balls toward the middle.
Because you're getting squeezed by the umpire?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you squeeze me anymore, my voice is going to go higher. They don't really like that comment too much, but they get the gist.
Yeah.
You try to be respectful, and I've always tried to be respectful of umpires, but consistency is what was all I asked for. Mm-hmm. So I've thrown pitches where it's knee-high corner, call it a ball.
Yeah.
And I'm batting, and the ball bounces, and he calls it a strike. And I'm like, that ball just killed a couple of worms over there, and you just strike. And
that's all you want is.
I guess my humor is not much appreciated, but you try to make a point where call it the same as much as you can, so we can adjust. If we have to adjust to you, we can.
Yeah.
Well, I've never understood. I actually had one of my customers sent me a coffee cup because he makes t-shirts and, you know, mm-hmm. all that marketing and branding. And many times when I'm doing play-by-play in the MSBL series or NABBA, I'm like, the strike zone, this is a drifting strike zone. That's what I'll call it. And it's true. The same strike zone you had in the first, second, third inning is not what you have in the seventh or the eighth.
No.
Or if the guy's been doing two games that day or he's in his third game that day.
True. Yep.
You know, I don't know if Koufax could pitch now as he did then, because he used to get a lot of strikes on letter high fastball.
Oh, my God. Yes.
It'd be called a ball. Now, you know, when you watch the replays, well, he just hit a high fastball. The fastball was at his belt.
It was at his belt.
What do they call a high fastball now?
Well, you remember this, the strikeout of Bob Gibson in 68 World Series against, he was facing Willie Horton.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball was, I mean, it was probably nose level. It was up here in front of his face, and he got rung up. And essentially, you know, we had a lot more lower scoring games back then. And the mound was higher. I think that possibly could give a pitcher advantage. I wouldn't want a higher mound, but
I did make it to one game in that World Series.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well,
just think, it happened right after Gibson had a 1.12 ERA.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many shutouts, but after that, the powers that be in baseball said, we need more offense. Lower the mound.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they didn't lengthen the pitching mound so that instead of 60'6", now it's 75.
It'd be all walks. Can you imagine?
It would be wild.
It would be wild. Hey, Kenny, what's your take on, give us your take on Pete Rose. I won't bring this up. We don't have to, you know, go long distance on this, but, you know, he's recently, they're going to put him in the Hall of Fame. It's going to be a few more years, Veterans Committee. But what is your take on that and maybe the whole Pete Rose situation?
You know, I know on every wall, in every dugout, in every clubhouse, do not bet on the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, yeah, he may have been guilty of betting on the game. And I guess his problem was that he constantly denied it and then suddenly he turned around and he admitted it. But what they wanted to keep Bart Giamatti's, legacy by, and his legacy essentially was banning Pete Rose from baseball.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think about things like Ray Lewis, that he may have been involved in a murder during a Super Bowl, and yet he was revered and he was voted into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Whether he did commit the murder or not, he was a person of interest, let's just say. Now, I know baseball is a type of game where we're behind the times, where all these other sports are trying to innovate. Baseball is hanging on to its old tradition.
Right.
But it gets to a point where we're not in the 1960s anymore, and suddenly they're starting to, you know, innovate all these new rules as trying to catch up.
Hmm.
So a lot of these rules do work. The pitch clock and the hitting, yeah. You know, there's thoughts on both sides, even though, you know, Mike Hargrove used to be called the human rain delay. So sometimes, you know, yeah, it takes a little too much. But I think for Pete Rose, the fact that they finally, you know, waited till he died.
Yeah.
To say, okay, now he's eligible to be voted in. I think, you know, we want to punish him enough so that he can't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You almost have to fake your own death.
They did the same thing to Ron Santo. They waited a year after he passed away to put him into the Hall of Fame. And I thought that was dirty.
It is. I mean, sometimes, like Roberto Clemente, you had no choice there because of what happened to him, so you voted in posthumously. I get it. But if you've been waiting for a long time, the way I look at it, you didn't get better over the years to now warrant being voted into the Hall of Fame where the last 15, 20 years you were denied.
Right.
Do you have a couple of players that you think should be in the Hall of Fame?
I think Don Mattingly should be in the Hall of Fame.
Really?
Oh, very much so. Because over a specific period of time, he was the best fielding first baseman. He was the best player in the game. It was him and Eric Davis back in the late 80s.
Late Boggs.
Yeah. Keith Hernandez was one of the best fielding first basemen around, and he was a leader.
Yeah.
Schilling, even though you may not agree with his views, but the thing is, the Hall of Fame is based on what you did on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was the case, Lawrence Taylor would have never been in the Hall of Fame for football.
Exactly. Or Ty Cobb, maybe, with all the things we've heard about him.
Yeah. That's right.
And Schilling should be in the Hall of Fame. I even did a podcast on it. The numbers are undeniable.
Right.
I think Curt Schilling and Jack Morris had very similar careers. And Jack Morris was finally voted in.
I think Schilling's a better pitcher. And I'll tell you why, because he threw in a steroid era with that smaller strike zone than Jack Morris did in the, basically late 70s through the 80s, early 90s. But they've got to be holding the grudge against Curt Schilling. I mean, this is a guy who averaged, 10 strikeouts to one walk several years, or a 9-to-1 ratio. That is, for a power pitcher, that's never been replicated.
Yeah.
See, what I think they should do is every 5 years, they should do an analysis on the voters.
True.
Mm-hmm. And if whoever's going to do an independent third party, they should, and then get rid of those voters who maybe have an agenda and put some new blood in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's like being a senator. Once you're there, there's no term limits.
Yeah. No.
And what I'm saying is there's too much self-importance to be a voter.
Yeah.
If somebody that you interviewed and you were very hostile and contentious with them, well, they're going to take it out on you when it's time to vote for your Hall of Fame candidacy, because they don't forget.
Yeah.
And I think if that's the case, you have to get rid of them.
It's interesting. I just ran into a guy who just joined our club at our radio station, and he's a Grammy voter for the Grammys. But he hasn't voted in a long time because he doesn't keep up with what's going on, in the very, very current music and everything. And like you say, maybe there's needs to be an adjustment in who voters are, because this guy could now get in there and, there's a lot of Grammy voters, but he could get in there and vote for or against somebody that just based on his attitude towards that person. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Whether it's Curt Schilling or Pete Rose, what they have done or said outside of the game, I don't know, does that need to have an effect on what they actually did in the game? Pete Rose didn't hit 290 one year or something because he was betting against himself. Obviously, if he was betting in those games, he was betting for himself based on, on his career and everything. And Curt Schilling, whether you like his opinions or not, we're going through that right now with Jaden Ivey with the Chicago Bulls that just got let go by the Chicago Bulls, and he went to my school, and so I have a feeling about that whole situation. Are we punishing people for what they say or do when you're giving out awards? as opposed to what they actually accomplished in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're saying about Curt Schilling, he did what he did in the game. What he says outside of the game,
they have a Memorial Day and a Pride Month.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing? You know, they celebrate Veterans Day, Memorial Day, Independence Day, Pride Month.
Boy, don't get me started.
Everybody should have, you know, be celebrated for who they are, what they are, and that's fine. But there's kind of a level of this. You know, they almost throw it in your face.
They sure do, yep.
And I find it disturbing. If you don't believe in what they believe in, they will ostracize you.
Mm-hmm.
And, land of the free, home of the brave, and all that wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only that way as if you agree with the narrative that certain people have. And I don't want to make it political. This is all about baseball, but baseball's like a microcosm of life anyway. Well, sports is, where sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. There's always politics, whether it's making a decision on someone's Hall of Fame candidacy, or even teams that are going for expansion. There's, you know, you have to win the owners that are there now. You have to sway them to your side so that you're able to have a team in your area. And I find it very, baseball, the game. I love the game.
Uh-huh.
Played between the lines. It's competitive. But once it becomes a business, it's not as much fun anymore.
Oh, that's for sure. And the money now in all sports, because they're talking about, expansion in basketball too at the same time. And the money that's being thrown around is just absolutely enormous. An individual couldn't possibly anymore buy a team by themselves.
No.
It has to be this massive organization that you have to put together. And then you're just getting into even more, political stuff to try to manage an organization like that.
You need at least $6 billion. I think $2 billion of it is just to get in the door. Right. That you have to pay the league to consider you.
Yeah.
Then you have to pay billions of dollars to create a franchise, create farm teams, create the stadium, the whole line. It is a very, so if you make it, look at I think Portland and somewhere in Tennessee, I think Nashville.
Nashville.
Those are the two next franchises.
Well, nothing against Florida or anything like that, but when you got two teams in Florida that are a mess, do we really need to create two new franchises, or maybe we need to move one or two? The Miami, they're talking, I saw a thing today, so far this season they're averaging 6,000 people a game. Tampa Bay, of course, has had their mess with their stadiums and all that stuff, and they don't draw any people either. So, maybe there's an alternative to all that.
There was talk about splitting a season between Tampa and Montreal.
That's right. That's right.
Because when Montreal had a team, I think one of the liquor distributors owned the team. And
Molson's, I think, yeah.
Excuse me?
I think it was Molson's, but I'm not sure, yeah.
Either Molson or...
Labatt's.
I think it was Hard Liquor, one of them. And they wanted to build a new stadium, and Montreal, the people would not allow it, so they moved to Washington.
Yeah.
And
oh,
see, to me, the biggest reason why Florida doesn't do well, because they have so many other things to do.
That's right.
You know, you got beaches over there. You've got, you know, it's in the summertime where the weather is warmer.
And how much of it is affordability? I mean, if you go to a spring training game here, you're paying $16, $17 for a beer, and now you're spending $50 to sit, you know, next to the dugout.
Yeah.
But at least you got people.
The regular season games have got to be even higher.
Oh, sure it is. And the thing is, it didn't matter if Tampa was good, if the Marlins were good. I think after 2003, when the Marlins won, the next year they had a fire sale. They sold all their players.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford them. I think Huizenga, whoever ran it at the time, he just sold everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, it was a cautionary tale. Why they decided to keep the teams in Florida, I'm not quite sure. Because it has been shown that they are among the lowest in attendance every year.
That's right.
You know, I know Texas already has Dallas. You know, they have the Texas Rangers. They have the Houston Astros. But San Antonio is an area which would really go for a team.
Oh, yeah. They have definitely had the fan base. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Austin even. But Austin's too close to Houston and Dallas, probably.
The sad part about I look at Oakland. And Oakland Stadium is an abomination.
Right.
And, you know, the city council gets very upset. Why team's leaving? Because you're so unyielding to them.
Mm-hmm.
They need to build a better stadium. I mean, you know, people fear for their lives, especially when they had that earthquake back in 89 and the stadium rocked.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever did any renovations on it.
Probably not.
And so people are leaving because the stadium is so rickety.
Yeah.
And Oakland has, I mean, they have fabulous fans there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to go to a game and wondering if you're going to make it out alive.
Yeah.
Well, I was there 3 years ago. Covering the Redwood Empire Baseball League would rent out the Coliseum once a year.
Uh-huh.
And I would go up and do our videos for that. And driving, and I got a taxi to take me from the hotel to the stadium. And just the old ratted out RVs were just lined up outside the stadium. And there was so much debris and homelessness and prostitution.
Yeah,
I used to stay at the La Quinta there, and when I was there in 2020, actually I was 22. There was prostitutes coming into the hotel room.
I guess it was really unnerving going to the game.
Yeah. What's that?
Those are the fringe benefits for going to the game.
Well, okay. It was unnerving, but it's a shame because when you get into the stadium, you know, it looked great. You know, the grass is beautiful. You think about all the great teams that, you know, the three-time world championship teams, and then to see this team, you know, go to heck. And now they're going to Vegas. They're building some billion-dollar stadium, and I might be wrong, but I think that endeavor is not going to be successful. I do not see Las Vegas. I just, for the money that they've got to put into that new stadium, I think it's $1.7 billion.
Yeah.
I don't see it becoming a success story. I just don't see it.
The one way they could make it work is if they have arrangements with all of the resorts and the hotels, you know, having them as part of being, you know, a guest at the hotel that you can come to the games.
Yep.
So this way, because like Arizona, Nevada is a transient state. People come, people leave.
Right.
People go there for you know, they go there for vacation, they go there for events. But the difference between Nevada for football and Nevada for baseball is that during football season, it's a destination because the weather is a lot better there than where they're coming from.
That's right.
In baseball, Nevada, Las Vegas is only 5 degrees cooler than here.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's why they have to have deals just for people to go to the hotels because there's a lot of vacancies there.
Right.
And so I do think that, and I'm sure that, here's the irony. The A's, they were supposed to have their minor league team play in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
They reneged on it. And they wound up playing in Summerlin, I think, in Nevada, but in a different area.
Yeah.
And when I found out that Vegas was willing to work with Oakland, well, they were burnt once by them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Vegas just wants a team.
Yeah.
And there was not a lot of other interest, even though I do think that they might have been considered for an expansion had they, you know, had they played their cards right. But because Oakland was willing to move, you know, they're taking it that way. But Oakland's management leaves something to be desired.
Yeah.
You know, even when they had really quality teams, except for playoff games, they could not fill the stadium.
No.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know this stadium they're building now is only like 30, 35,000 seat capacity.
Yeah, it's pretty small. Yeah.
And I guess they're doing that because there's more of a chance of them filling out the stadium. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be a lot of seats there, but there's going to be a boatload of luxury boxes.
Yeah.
And that's where they're going to make their money on,
yeah,
is filling those luxury suites. Because I was, you know, it's funny, an acquaintance of mine was looking to have a franchise in Vegas. So I did a lot of legwork and I spoke to the people in the Chamber of Commerce and the Parks Department there. So I kind of knew firsthand on what Vegas was setting themselves up for. I do hope that the people that are going to be running the A's franchise does not run it like a not a top notch, but just a second tier organization, yeah, whereby Nevada, this could be a lot of empty seats, I think, even in a small stadium.
Wow.
Sometimes you have to worry about who is going to come to your place. If you want someone to build a stadium, are these people, what kind of track record do they have?
Mm-hmm.
And Oakland's ownership track record is not very good.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, it's like, okay, I'm going to buy a car. The guy never took care of the car, but I'm going to buy his car anyway. And he's going to service my car, even though he never serviced it before. Always, every time he fixed something, he left a couple of nuts and bolts out. And you wonder why the engine is falling out of the bottom. Well, hell. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Las Vegas, because I really hope that you don't regret the people that you're in bed with now.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. There was, talking about Montreal, I did attend a game when Rosti Staub was with Montreal at Yari Park, the old stadium there that they first played in. That was the most fun stadium you could ever watch a game, and it was just a blast. And the people of Montreal, it was just they didn't care about the baseball that much. They were just there to party at the game. It was, you know, all the French Canadians and all that stuff. So it was a blast to be able to have gone to that ballpark. we're going to have to stop pretty soon, but there was one question that I wanted to ask Ken about pitching, and that is, when you got back involved after all these years away and everything, what did it feel like pitching that first game in MSBL when you got into it?
Well, I felt that I was hoping the batters were wearing Kevlar vests because I did not know where the ball was going. It was fun. I always enjoy pitching. It was because if you were good, you can affect the game.
Right.
You know, and I know once you let go of the ball, you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But if you threw the ball well enough, then you could limit a lot of the damage that was done against you. And I always wanted that pressure.
Uh-huh.
You know, you play outfield, and if you get three balls a game, you know, you consider yourself lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where I'm saying, you know, I play a great outfield when the ball's hit somewhere else. So, but yeah, I pitching was something that I enjoyed doing, and Jeff will attest to this. There were weeks where I would throw 40, 50 innings.
Whoa. 65 in 4 innings about 10 years ago. Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah. We were playing.
Was it 65?
Yeah. A team from Michigan. They had a very short staff team, so I pitched all 7 games.
Wow.
And you played a week in NABBA and 3 weeks of MSBL.
Yeah.
Tournament.
Of course, if at the end of the tournaments, my left arm is about 5 inches longer than my right, but, you know, that will adjust in time.
You are the Mickey Lolich of the MSBL World Series.
Yes, I am, but my pant size, fortunately, is a little smaller.
That's good. He just passed away.
You know, I don't know why he wasn't. I don't think he was enshrined.
No,
he has not been. No,
I don't understand that. You know, he beat Bob Gibson. He won 3 games.
3 games, yeah.
In the 68 World Series, he was a very consistent pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if his body size was used against him.
Yeah,
the guy would throw 370 innings. 370 innings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a pitcher has a hangnail, he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
And to me, that's because the agents have too much power.
Yeah.
Good point.
He was definitely the hero of that World Series because Denny McClain did not have, you know, he had done spectacular during the regular season, but did not have it in the World Series because the one game that I went to was the game that Denny McClain lost 10-1, I think.
Yeah, he lost to Gibson twice.
Yeah.
And then he won game 6. They won, the Tigers won like 12-0 because I think the Cardinals had the owner, Gussie Bush or whatever. I think he pitched that game.
Yeah.
And then Lolich pitched against Gibson, and Lolich pitched on 2 days rest.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, where you make moments.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 days rest against the most dominant pitcher or one of the 3 most dominant pitchers of that era.
Yeah.
And because, wasn't it Curt Flood misjudged the fly ball, he beat him.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, the other thing is that, you know, being a Detroiter at that time, the effect it had on the city was incalculable.
Oh yeah,
because of what had happened the year before, and that was an extremely dramatic thing for the city, as well as for the baseball team. So,
well, think about it. Except for Cleveland, Detroit hasn't had a lot of things to celebrate. I know the Tigers in '84 they won.
Yeah,
and the Lions. Well, they haven't won, and the Pistons.
That's since the 50s.
Yeah. You know, when Bobby Lane is still your best quarterback. It's like the Bears. Sid Luckman's still their best quarterback.
Yeah.
and who was around then?
That's right.
We weren't. It's like the Jets with Joe Namath.
Yeah.
64. Jets are the place where quarterbacks go to die. But
that's right.
That is true.
For sure.
Or Arizona, maybe.
Yeah. So, Jeff, do you have one last question before we say goodbye to Ken today?
I just want to thank Ken for, you know, just I've filmed this guy for so many years. It's been a while since I think we've done a game, but
we're going to have to change
a lot of great memories.
Now, as I said, you've always done a first-class presentation. I always did think that if somebody had the foresight to have you on their network, you know, it's like you're the diamond in the rough. People don't make moves anymore innovative like that. They make moves not to lose their job.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's someone out there who's really special, they will never find them because they will not be looking for them and they will not take the opportunity. It's a shame.
Well, I appreciate it, and you're giving me more credit than I deserve.
No. See, I throw compliments around like manhole covers.
Well, you know, it's funny. I ran across last year. I've interviewed a lot of really interesting people from up north of the Bay Area. There's like three or four leagues up there, and I can't remember what league it is, but one of the leagues up there made a deal with one of the local radio stations, like a PBS radio station, where they have somebody that goes out and does play-by-play on their MSBL baseball games. Mm-hmm. They're then played on the radio up there. And really? It's just, wow, there's stuff like that going around that you never hear about, and it's fantastic. But anyway, I want to thank both of you for being part of this today. I got to do my little house cleaning before we say goodbye, which is thanking everybody for watching or listening to Barrel It Up. Please subscribe to the channel. Every podcast channel tells you that it makes a difference, and it's true. And I say the same thing. It does help podcasts grow. Ratings from 1 to 5, 5 be great, but whatever you think is fair. Please leave comments at barrelitup.com. barrelitup@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you have somebody you think would be great to be on the show, please let us know. Let us know why and who, and please give us their contact information. That would be helpful. If you'd like to see a complete list of all the guests we've had on the show, please go to jjambrone.com. In both cases, don't worry about those. Will be in the description, the spelling and all that. And you go to page 5 at jjambrone.com. You'll see a complete list of all the shows we've had on. This is number 97, as a matter of fact, on our list so far. And you can go to Facebook and Instagram and at Barrel It Up and see video clips of some of the shows. And this show will be on there too. There'll be video clips of this show. And lastly, I'd like to thank everybody that makes the show possible. I'd like to thank TJ and the people at Pod Populi. They do all the editing and distribution because we're on every possible podcast form that you can find out there, Spotify, Apple, whoever. We're on there somewhere. And I want to thank Susan, my executive producer, and Robin, my associate producer. And Ken, thank you so much for being on 2 shows now with us. It's been fantastic to have you on. And Jeff, thank you for being the co-host on this. Hopefully we can do this some more because I appreciate being able to sit back and listen to everybody myself. It's been great. So thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That's right. Thank you.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.